Good afternoon. This is Tamara reading the Rantoul Press for the week ending August 12th. RTHS unveils back to school plan. From Rantoul. About 20% of Rantoul Township High School's 790 students have opted not to set foot in the building this fall. Instead, choosing a fully remote learning model, Superintendent Scott Amerio told the school board Monday night. To limit the number of students in the building at any point as the COVID-19 pandemic continues, starting August 20th, half of the remaining students will attend school in person on Tuesdays and Thursdays, with the other half attending on Wednesdays and Fridays. Mondays will be remote learning days for all students. Students can switch models at the semester break. Students wearing face masks, undergoing regular temperature checks in classes, maintaining social distance are part of a broader educational plan crafted by a committee of parents, teachers, students, counselors, social workers, and administrators. The community used Illinois Department of Public Health and Centers for Disease Control and Prevention guidelines when designing the reopening plan. All of these guidelines, what they are designed to do is mitigate close contact, Amerio said, saying it has been challenging in some classrooms to space desks 6 feet apart. This is a plan we came up with for a situation we've never been in. It's been a struggle trying to figure this all out. In most classrooms, there will be about a dozen desks in use, all facing the same way. The main tenets of the plan involve maximizing in-person time with teachers, reducing the number of classes students had to focus on, being respectful of teachers' prep work for in-person and remote learning, and not reducing opportunities for students to take their chosen classes. The bottom line is our kids need to see us and we need to see them, Amerio said. Some Champaign County vote-by-mail applications sent with error in return address. Before you return your vote-by-mail application to the Champaign County clerk, better check the return address on the bottom of the form. Some voters have received applications in the mail with instructions to return them to Champaign County Clerk Aaron Ammons, but the address provided for the clerk's office includes the wrong zip code. The correct zip is 61802, not the one on the application, 61208. Ammons said he and his office are aware of the zip code error, and he urged using the online vote-by-mail application on his website. It's much more efficient, he said. For those who have already received a vote-by-mail application with the wrong zip code, he said, it's a simple fix. A significant number of vote-by-mail applications have already gone out, Ammons said. He hopes most people who live in the community will notice the transposed numbers in the zip code and be aware of the correct zip code for that area of Urbana, he said. Ammons also said he's spoken with the postmaster and has been assured that even those applications addressed with the incorrect zip code will still reach his office, though it may take a bit longer. Vote-by-mail ballots won't begin to hit the mail until September 24th. This is not going to stop someone from getting our ballot, Ammons said. He and his office are looking into how the error was made, he said. The clerk's office used a couple of vendors, one that created the application and another that mailed it, Ammons said. Local realtor Stephanie Pratt said she received 3 applications to vote-by-mail at her home with the transposed zip code, one for herself and 2 others for her mom and stepfather, who moved out of state 4 years ago. She plans to return hers using the right zip code, along with the other 2 saying, hey, they don't live here, she said. Pratt said she can understand mistakes are made, but this is a very important thing, and I would expect that organization to have a proofreader to make sure no mistakes are made. Voting for the upcoming election is already subject nationally to mistrust and controversy, she said. John Farney, a former Republican Champaign County Treasurer and Deputy County Clerk who worked in the Election Division, posted one of the applications with the wrong zip code on Facebook and directed a comment to Ammons. No excuses this time, he said in his post. It's not a misunderstanding like everything else. It's not racist. You screwed up. Your name is on the letterhead. Take responsibility. Farney said several people shared the application with the incorrect zip code with him. I have seen 4 of them so far with the wrong address on it, he said. And now from Ian Wang. The Art of Learning from Other People. A couple of weeks ago, the U of I and our community lost a legend, Lou Henson, 1932 to 2020, who passed away. Our local newspaper, the News Gazette, ran a front page story and some additional sections of memorial stories on him. I came to the U of I near the end of Mr. Henson's legendary U of I basketball coaching career, so I did not have much firsthand interactions with him. However, as a U of I World Culture and Heritage Museum curator, I developed my personal interest in the U of I and our local cultural history and art. Reading local newspapers became one of my exciting social and cultural interactions and an important part of my daily life. Through these social and cultural activities, I got to know one of the News Gazette photojournalists, Robert K. O'Daniel. Due to our common interests in photojournalism and in art, I had the opportunity to curate a needle art exhibition in O'Daniel's private Prairie Boatwork Art Gallery in Mahomet in 2005. I also collected 13 photography prints from his solo photography art exhibition at Heartland Art Gallery in 2013 to add to my U of I and local art collections. I remember one of these photographs is his most exciting shot that came during a U of I basketball game. He titled the photo, No Basket, a photo he is still proud of himself for taking more than two decades later. In the photo caption, O'Daniel wrote, CU2, Champaign, Illinois, December 8, 1989, No Basket. University of Illinois guards Steve Bardo, 35, and Kendall Gill, 13, break up a drive to the basket by Indiana State's Luke Gross, 43. University of Illinois leads the Indiana State team by a wide margin in the second half. O'Daniel told me that the game was one of the most fascinating ones he photographed during Mr. Henson's career as U of I basketball coach. In recent weeks, I found reading through those commemorative stories in the News Gazette about Lou Henson fascinating. One of the examples is former U of I swimmer Doug McConnell's recalling his personal experience with Mr. Henson. Lou Henson is what a coach should be, a teacher. Not just a teacher of basketball or of swimming or of anything they ostensibly coach, but of being a good person, a good teammate, and a gentleman. In Lou's case, both a gentleman and a gentleman. I will never forget him and will always be grateful to him. I was particularly inspired by what McConnell concluded and shared with us. College years are a time to learn about the world and to grow up, part of which is learning how to make assessments about people to admire and to avoid. I was smart enough to know to admire men like Lou Henson. McConnell's advice to young people reminds me what my father taught me when I was a teenager about making friends and about associating with other people. A real good friend could be a role model and benefit you for a whole life, but a bad friend may cost you and trouble you for the rest of your life. Interestingly and significantly, in the book, Confucius Said It First, author Dr. Tehi C. retold the story more than 2,500 years ago. Confucius told his disciple that if three people are walking together, including Confucius himself, any of them must be his teacher. If I am walking with two other men, each of them will serve as my teacher. His disciple could not understand why and how any of these two ordinary people walking together with his master Confucius could be his teacher, because Confucius was regarded as the greatest philosopher and educator in the nation. Looking at his disciple's confused face, Confucius explained, I will pick out the good points from the one and imitate them, and the bad points in the other and correct them in myself. Rantoul housing stock in better shape than anticipated. Rantoul's residential structures are in better shape than urban planning manager Chris Milliken initially imagined. Milliken said a survey of more than 3,400 structures in the community showed many are in good shape. Intern Josh Frericks assisted with the fieldwork of inventorying the properties, all done from the public right-of-way. The survey used three criteria to judge a property's condition: exterior perspective, foundation, and roof. Of the 3,425 structures, not including mobile homes, 66% are considered to be in good condition, 31% fair, and 2%, 66 structures, poor. When counting mobile homes, those numbers changed to 70%, 36%, and 3%. Before the survey, Milliken said he was guessing about 50% of the structures were in good condition, 40% fair, and 10% poor. This was pleasantly surprising to me, he said. From an exterior perspective, more than 91% of the properties needed no repair or minor repair, which is very good, Milliken said. In examining foundations, only about 2% needed some work. Roof condition, however, was a different story. About 39% needed moderate or major work done. Trustee Gary Wilson said grant money was available in the past for roof work. Village Administrator Scott Eisenhower said the village will include roof repair replacement money in the Community Development Block grant plan that is available to low-income residents. By housing type, the community contains 2,803 single-family homes with 70.8% judged good, 27.3% fair, and 1.9% poor. There are 165 duplexes. Of that total, 49.7% are good, 48.5% fair, and 1.8% poor. Condos and townhomes number 123. Of that total, 68.3% are good, 31.7% fair, and none poor. Of the 333 multifamily residences, the condition of 35.7% is good, 60.4% fair, and 3.9% poor. There are 349 mobile homes in Rantoul, with most, 75.1%, judged to be in fair shape, 7.2% good, and 17.8% poor. Broken down by Village Board District, the condition of housing in District 4, the northwest part of town, is best at 1.41, while District 3, Central and South, is the worst at 2.89. Broken down by neighborhood, the Indian Hills area in northwest Rantoul was judged to be in the best condition, 0.02, while the Meadowlands area on the former Chanute Air Force Base was the worst at 5.68, followed by the South Tanner area in central Rantoul at 4.25. Resident Deborah Sweat asked if the presentation broke down how many homes were owner-occupied and how many were rental. She said in the past, 50 to 55% were rental units. Milliken said it's still about 50%. Village of Rantoul might test more often to hire police officers. The village might loosen the testing restrictions that pertain to the hiring of village police officers. Some residents are also asking for the hiring of more minorities by the village as a whole. Police Chief Tony Brown asked the village board to allow for a continuous police officer testing program by the Fire and Police Commission. He said the police department has been working on ways to improve the recruiting process and to create a more diverse applicant pool. One of the difficulties is we test once every 2 years or once a year, Brown said at last week's Village Board study session. When we do identify someone who we believe would be a good officer candidate, it takes too long before we can test. He said the Champaign County Sheriff's Office and the Champaign and Urbana Police Departments already have a continuous testing process. Another roadblock is that no one older than 35 may become a new police officer. Resident Deborah Sweat said she read an article that talked about older adults being better qualified as police officers and that women are still underrepresented in law enforcement. She said only one black person and 3 to 4 Latinos are on the police force. Brown said there are 4 to 5 females, 4 Hispanics, and 1 black person within the department. Our philosophy is we need to have an organization that's representative of the community we serve, Brown said. In a perfect world, half the workforce would be female. We definitely need to get African-American police officers. It's been a challenge. We've been working to identify black police officers as well as Hispanic and Asian. Sweat, in her public comments, pointed to 7 or 8 minorities being employed by the village out of 130 people. To my knowledge, Sweat said, not one minority serves in a supervisory role. They have seniority and are asked to train white co-workers who receive the promotions and salary increases and remain the lowest paid. Sweat asked the village to create an independent review audit of hiring practices, job descriptions, salaries, compensation, and promotions. Resident Tracy Williams also pointed to the number of minorities employed by the village and said the village has a lot of work to do to make the town equitable for employment and career advancement. Also, Brown said only the top 8 candidates scoring-wise can be interviewed. The amendment will be among the items to be voted on at the board's regular meeting August 11th. He also asked the position of lieutenant be changed to deputy chief. The change won't create a new rank or provide additional compensation. In other village business, Administrator Scott Eisenhower said in late September he and urban planning manager Chris Milliken will be presenting a districting roadshow to explain to residents in each of the new village board districts about the election process. For anyone who might be interested in running for village board, and slightly address the referendum in November as it relates to staggered terms. They will also explain what is expected of a trustee or elected official. I think sometimes people feel as though you show up the first and second Tuesday of each month, you're here for a few minutes and you collect the big fat paycheck and go home, Eisenhower said, adding, there's more work to it than that. The dates, times, and locations of the district meetings will be announced at the September board study session. Eisenhower said he and Comptroller Pat Chamberlain will be evaluating the revenue of the first quarter of the fiscal year to give an idea of the impact of the coronavirus on village finances. He said he will bring a report on those findings in September. It will help us as we make decisions about revenue and expenses for the rest of this budget year, Eisenhower said. ATV restrictions. Brown presented an ordinance change proposal in regard to the operation of all-terrain vehicles in the community. It would make it illegal for most people to operate an ATV in a residential area, as well as on village streets and parks. Exemptions include municipal-owned ATVs, as well as those used in parades and other such community events, as well as on-site business operations. Trustee Mark Wilkerson asked how many complaints have been received about ATV use. Brown said they have primarily come from one person who said she has spoken with her neighbors and we got complaints from other parts of town. Brown said the problem is the noise. One person said he has seen ATVs being ridden on bike and walking paths. One of the big issues is Mahoney Trailer Park, now Rancho Rantoul Estates, Brown said. That's where the complaints are coming from, all the noise, around Briar Cliff and Maplewood. Added Wilkerson, my concern is I like freedom and I don't like to tell someone what they can or cannot do on their own property as long as it's within reason. I understand public areas. It would be fun to have an ATV park inside Rantoul, maybe out on base somewhere. I'm not saying we should do it, but it would be nice. Wilkerson said he understands the proposal. Human Relations Committee. Mayor Chuck Smith said he had been working on additional appointments to the Human Relations Committee and said he was quite pleased by the number of people who had been recommended or stepped forward for consideration. A lot of talent has come our way, so we're fortunate to have that in our community, Smith said. Smith said he hoped to have the final names available prior to the August 11th regular board meeting. Previously, Smith named Sherry Faulkner, Herm Fogel, Kelly Foster, Tony Payton, and John Vasquez Jr. to the panel and said he planned to add more members. The committee is designed to reduce prejudice and discrimination in the community based on race, religion, national origin, cultural background, sex, sexual orientation, age, disability, and other factors. Trustee discusses not wearing face mask. Wilkerson said he wanted to explain why he doesn't wear a face mask at the board meetings. He said he doesn't wear the masks while sitting in a chair away from everyone. Wilkerson said it is medically intolerable for him to wear a mask. I wear them when I feel it's appropriate. With these panels here, no one's in front of me. I don't feel like I need to wear a mask for my health or for anyone else around me, Wilkerson said. He asked that if anyone has a complaint about him, to direct it to him, not to the mayor. Employee retiring. Eisenhower announced Community Services Officer Danny Russell planned to retire December 8th. He has worked with the village since 1990. He said Russell had earned vacation and sick leave payments of $23,351. The Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund payments will increase by $235 per month. The effect on the payment on liability to the village will total $42,252. Public comments. Sweat thanked the mayor and Ken Turner, Grants Management and HUD Administrator, for her interview with the Human Relations Committee, and added, "I hope after 12 years of inactivity, the group, along with other like-concerned citizens, Rantoul Reformed and other citizens and allies like me, will continue to address racism, discrimination, and other concerns afflicting African Americans and others in the community." Sweat also proposed Century Boulevard be designated Honorary Tuskegee Airmen Drive, noting Rantoul has capitalized on the notoriety and accomplishments of the airmen whose squadron was activated at Chanute just prior to the U.S. involvement in World War II. Sweat also reminded the board that October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. She said domestic violence is a continuing problem in Rantoul, a weekly occurrence as reflected in the Rantoul Press police report. She asked what the status of Rantoul's event or educational program is, and said it is an opportunity to involve the Chamber of Commerce. She said since the May death of George Floyd at the hands of a police officer in Minneapolis, corporate America and some municipalities in the country have explored ways to support the African American community. She asked the mayor and board to consider moving any and all federal, state, and local funds received and used targeting low-income and minorities to a community development financial institution as a good faith effort in support of equality and equity, unless it already exists. Sweat said such institutions assist the marginalized and underrepresented with financial needs and opportunities. She said one of the few of those institutions in Illinois is the Community Plus Federal Credit Union in Rantoul. During her turn to speak, during public comments, Williams thanked the mayor for meeting with her and Marquez Reed from Rantoul Reformed, which is a local organization designed to combat racism in the community. She also cited a comment made by the mayor and village administrator that black people don't get involved. She said they provided a list of black people who want to participate in the town, and due to encouragement by the organization, they are pushing forward. My hope is that the mayor chooses two minorities to be additional members of the Human Relations Committee, a committee required by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development to hear and help with acts of discrimination. Williams also informed the board she had spoken at the Citizens Advisory Committee meeting and told of her concerns about the five-year plan. She said the highest area of need addressing proper housing, homelessness, and other areas is in the black community. However, no one consulted with organizations that can assist in dismantling and aiding in dealing with the affecting of systemic racism, Williams said. We'll turn now to the death notices for the week ending August 12th. Updated August 6th. Timothy Wilfong of Glendale, California, passed away on August 5th at Glendale Adventist Medical in Glendale, California. He's survived by his parents, Dick and Phyllis Wilfong of Penfield, his son Stephen of Carson, California, and his brothers Don Wilfong of Gifford and Brian Wilfong of Ogden. He was a wonderful blessing to all who knew him, and he will be sorely missed. Also updated, August 8th. Merwin Donahue. The Kingdom of Heaven welcomed Merwin G. Donahue, 93, of Rantoul, as she graduated from this earthly world Friday, August 7th. Following safe COVID guidelines, a service was held Wednesday, August 12th at noon at the gathering place of the First United Methodist Church, Rantoul. Burial followed at Maplewood Cemetery, Rantoul. Memorials may be made to the First United Methodist Church Youth Group, Rantoul. Lux Memorial Chapel, Rantoul, was in charge of the arrangements. This concludes the reading of the death notices for the week, and we'll return to local news and opinion to finish. From Rantoul, more contracts set for sports complex. The village board is expected to approve an additional $5.815 million in contracts for the under-construction Rantoul Family Sports Complex. The board will vote on the measures at the August 11th meeting. They include $122,364 for the purchase of concession equipment from Serview, $2,115,942 for an amended agreement with Burns and Jones to coordinate with cross construction on concrete and asphalt surfaces, $755,539 for an amended agreement with Burns and Jones to coordinate with SK Fence on all fencing, $1,046,000 with Oberlander Electric for electric installation, $1,775,000 with Cooper Lighting Solutions for sport and parking lot lighting. For the Cooper contract, Recreation Department Director Luke Humphrey said while another firm submitted a bid that is $75,000 less expensive for the sport and parking lot lighting, that firm did not meet bid specifications. Village Administrator Scott Eisenhower said the village did not make a quick decision on that matter, but felt the contract with Cooper was the better option. Search for missing Rensselaer man continues 3 weeks later. From an original dated story, July 28th. It's been 3 weeks since Bill Prater of Rensselaer was last seen floating on the Iroquois River with two other individuals. He was reported missing by his family on July 15th. The two individuals who were with Prater prior to his disappearance were questioned by police. They said they were separated from Prater at some point during the rafting trip, police said. Prater was last seen northeast of Rensselaer County, northeast of Rensselaer at County Road 100 South, east of US 231. One Facebook post said Prater's wallet, phone, and t-shirt were found in his mailbox. According to the Jasper County Sheriff's Department, searches of the Iroquois River Basin were conducted by the Jasper County Sheriff's Department, Indiana Department of Conservation, Lake County Sheriff's Office, and the White County Sheriff's Office last week. The searches included walking, kayaking, air support, including a helicopter and UAV and sonar. Volunteers are now willing to pick up that search. According to the Help Find Bill Prater Facebook page, a search party is being organized by Friends of Prater. Continue to watch the Facebook page for more details. Anyone with information regarding the whereabouts of Prater are asked to contact the Jasper County Sheriff's Office at 219-866-7344. This has been Tamara reading the Rantoul Press for the week ending August 12th. Have a great day. I hope to read with you again soon.